like, as soon as places started opening back up and I was able to perform again, I was like, I love this. I need this. I have to keep doing this.
Welcome to the American Grown Podcast, hosted by Austin Sullivan. The American Grown Podcast will focus on people from different walks of life and their journey to where they are now. Now, turn up your volume and settle in for a great episode.
This is the American Grown Podcast, recorded inside the ColorTech Creative Solutions Studios. Today, we have Amber Nadine, multi-genre singer and songwriter. Amber, welcome to episode 97 of the American Grown Podcast.
Hi.
Yes. Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you for being here. A couple things to get out of the way. You're a cat lover, and I have a cat lover.
Yes. So I have Wisteria, Morgan, and Santa.
Santa?
Yeah.
Like Santa Claus?
Like Santa Claus, because he was a stray, and we found him on a neighbor's porch.
Okay.
2 days before Christmas.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I guess Santa decided to arrive early this year.
So that's awesome. That is such a neat story. I'll tell you, my wife and I are also cat fans. We have 3 kitty cats. So that is one thing we have in common. And then you have like a love of the color purple.
Yeah. It's like an unhealthy obsession that I never plan to cure.
How did you, because it's like an addiction, right? You have a purple tumbler here, your outfit, even your pants are purple.
Yeah. So, it started very, very, when I was very, very young. I was obsessed with Barney as a child.
Okay. I was a Barney fan too.
I think anything that I saw that was purple, I associated with Barney and I immediately just loved it. And then that kind of stuck. The Barney thing didn't as I got older. But the color association stuck with me. So, I don't really know how else to describe it, honestly. But I have a bumper sticker on my car that says, everything is purple. Anything else can be dyed or painted.
Okay.
And my car is green. So it's like in the process, it's like that can be dyed or painted.
It could be. Yeah. That's so funny. Oh my gosh. So way back, this goes back to elementary school. I used to have one of those backpacks on wheels, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was the color purple.
Yay.
Yes, purple. Now I've since like, I like color green a little bit more because I'm like an Eagles fan. So don't judge me, listeners, and it was interesting. I looked through my polos and I could not find a purple polo. So now I need to add a color purple. I have a blue on today, which is one of the primary colors. And if you mix blue and red, you get purple. Yeah.
Yes. I have a saying that purple is the primary color. It's the only primary color. And I actually have t-shirts that say that. So maybe I'll just need to get you a t-shirt
that would be
says
awesome.
Purple is the primary
color. Do you really have a t-shirt that says that?
I do.
Yeah. Who'd have thought? I just came up with that like on the spot, and you actually have a.
It's on my merch store.
There we go. Okay, we're gonna dive into all that, Amber. So let's also discuss, because on the form you put this, and I think you're probably the only person out of. Well, this is episode 97. So to give some backstory for the listeners, you and your mom were featured extras in Stephen King's 2016 sci-fi movie Cell. Real quick, brief overview. Which features some big names like Samuel L. Jackson and John Cusack,
mm-hmm.
Correct? The movie's brief overview is cell phone signals go off all across like worldwide, right? And people, it's like a murderous pandemic. There's zombies involved, all kinds of stuff. So how did you and your mom become an extra in like a pretty big movie? I mean, Samuel Jackson's a huge star.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isabel Furman was in it too. She was on The Hunger Games and the lead actress in the horror movie Orphan. And the way I've always been a very self-efficient child, like someone who really, I really wanted to do acting as a child. So like in film and television. So I was constantly Googling things like how to be an actress in this movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think I was like, I think I was either fresh out of high school or really close to graduating when I finally came across a website called thesoutherncastingcall.com. And they put out casting notices for background work for movies and TV shows that are filmed in like North Carolina, South Carolina, and like Georgia. And I saw this casting notice where they were looking for a mother and a daughter to play like dead zombies in a Stephen King movie. And both me and my mom are huge Stephen King fans. Like, she's been reading his books for a while. I've been watching his movies for a while. And when we heard that Samuel L. Jackson and John Cusack were supposed to be in it, we were like, well, that's a no-brainer. So I submitted us for it. And it happens really fast in the acting world. You get booked. And then you're supposed to be there like the next day at 4 a.m. When that happened, we were like, okay, well, we got to hop on a plane now.
Yeah.
So we hopped on a plane. We flew down.
Holy cow. Okay.
And we were kind of sketched out a little bit, honestly, because they were asking us to shave our arms and our legs. But the reason we found out about it later is because of the prosthetics that they put on us to make it look like we were like zombies.
Oh, okay. Okay.
They had to have like no hair or else the prosthetics wouldn't stick. So we were like, is this legit? Are we about to walk into something really bad here? What should we do?
Right.
But no, it ended up being honestly one of the best experiences of our lives. We ended up laying in a pool of blood on the ground for an hour.
Okay.
And the scene was supposed to be that my mom had just shot me because I had turned into a zombie after answering the phone, and then she shot herself.
Okay.
So she's still
a little dark, but that's Stephen King.
Yeah.
Okay.
She still had the gun in her hand when John Cusack, Samuel L. Jackson, and Isabel Furman come along and find us. And they're in the process of looking for guns because they want to survive the zombie apocalypse.
Yeah.
So John Cusack takes the gun out of my mom's hand. And Samuel L. Jackson kicked my foot to, like, see if I was still alive.
Yeah.
But it was a really cool experience. They both shook our hands and said that it was a joy to meet us. Samuel L. Jackson was really a very kind person.
Yeah.
Like, you'd never believe that he's, like, some famous movie star who's in pretty much everything.
Seriously, right.
Yeah. And Isabel Furman, we actually got to share a hair and makeup trailer with her.
Whoa. Okay.
And we chatted with her a little bit, and I was telling her that I was a fan of hers from the movie Orphan, and she was just the sweetest, sweetest person. So it was a lot of fun. We did some more background work after that for about a year. I think we were on Allegiant. My mom was on Insurgent, you know, the Divergent trilogy movies.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she ended up, I wasn't allowed to do this because I was underage. I was still 17 at the time.
Okay.
But she ended up being in the last Mockingjay movie as well.
Really?
Yeah. You see her for like a blip of a second.
Is she in the crowd or what? What was she?
Have you seen the movies?
It's been a while. I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah.
But, so yeah. Spoiler alert for anybody that's listening.
Yeah.
At the end of Mockingjay Part 2, when President Coyne gets shot and killed.
Yes, okay. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
She is one of the people standing behind her, running like around, freaked out because the president has just been shot, sort of thing. So
that's pretty neat. Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was a lot of fun. Those were back in our little like Atlanta days.
Yeah, Atlanta days. I love that. I mean, that's a first for the podcast. I've never had somebody. So technically, now that we've met, like, I'm, like, you're my connection, like, Samuel L. Jackson. You know what I mean? Like, what is
there's
that thing?
Like, everybody that you meet, there's, like, one person that's connected to another person that's connected to, like, that's a famous person. Yeah.
I
get it. So, yeah, I've shaken Samuel L. Jackson's hand. Wow. He shook, my hands were, like, covered in blood, and he still shook my hands.
He still shook your head?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, it was pretty cool.
What a neat experience. All right. So, like, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, you have so much more that you're doing. And we're going to get into it right now. So let's start off with your early childhood. Where were you born and raised? What was your childhood like?
So I was born in, I guess, technically Harrisburg Hospital. But I was raised in Hummelstown. We have this nice little country house up on a hill. It's like near a highway, but it's not like so crazy that it doesn't feel like the city. It feels kind of like backwoods-ish, country-ish. And yeah, I mean, I guess my childhood, I was constantly singing. My mom claims that I was singing since the day that I was born.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, I was homeschooled. That was always a joy for me, but it wasn't always a joy with the stereotypes that were thrown at me. Yeah. As a child.
Yeah. So, so your mom and dad, they had, it sounds like, did they work on a farm or what did they do?
No. So my dad was actually, a computer programmer, a software computer programmer. He worked at IBM for 30 years and then he retired from there and worked at Essex Technology for I think 6 years. My mom, she actually stopped working when she had me so that she could stay at home and take care of me and raise me and everything. Which was really a wonderful foundation for me.
Yeah.
I was so, so grateful. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, perfect, Amber. And did you have any siblings or?
No.
No, okay, perfect. So, yeah, that's where I wanted to kind of like segue then into like being homeschooled. To me, I think you're right. It has like a stigma in society where they put a label on it. It's like, oh, they're homeschooled. And it's frowned upon, which I don't understand why. What was your experience like for homeschool?
Everyone thought that I was antisocial and that I wasn't socializing enough with kids that were my age. Excuse me. Which I don't know how I don't know how much more ridiculous you could be because I was in community theater all the time. I was always like the most outgoing and most talkative person that was my age. So I think it was just a lot of people that were envious of the fact that I got to spend so much time with my family, but yeah. They didn't, you know what I mean? They didn't get to give that same kind of care and love and support to their kids that my parents were giving me.
Right. Maybe a little jealousy, maybe.
Yeah. You know? But I do think that just in general, a lot of people put such the stereotype of the antisocial on homeschooling. And there are some people that do meet that stigma. But I think that it's not really anybody else's business. If it's your life, just let me live my life sort of thing.
But yeah. I feel like to have the privilege to have, you know, a parent that can homeschool, especially nowadays with the cost and everything, is huge. I feel like you get totally different experiences, but yet you're still out there being social. And I feel like you're 100% correct. Like everyone's like, oh, they're not social or they don't hang out with friends. It's like, you have friends, you just do different things. And I can say going through public school system, I met some great people, but like a lot of the kids that I went to school with, I haven't seen, haven't talked to, haven't hung out with. There's a select few, but like since probably we graduated, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, who really? Yeah.
It's interesting to me too, that they would put everybody that's in this, that's the same age, mm-hmm. into one room and think that they all would get along. I don't know. For me, it was such a blessing to not have to have that entrapment, I guess is the way I kind of look at it. Because I felt free to be able to talk to anybody of any age, regardless of whether they were like 13 or 30, you know? And that was really cool for me growing up because all the other kids were like saying, ew, you talk to that person? They're in the 7th grade when we're in the 6th.
Yeah.
Or it was just weird. But I was very blessed. I got to choose my curriculums too. And one of the things that I absolutely loved that I got to choose was a company, I don't even know if they're still around anymore, but it was called Rock and Learn. And what they did was they would put music to different facts. So like for multiplication, it was like this country song of like, one times one is one. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And that, to this day, that's like still how I multiply sometimes. I have to sing it.
Right.
But it stuck. It helped me learn it. And it's the same with like one of my favorites. There was one that was talking about all of the bones in the body.
Okay.
When I was in school, I was a huge anatomy nerd. I loved, you know, the study of the human body. And honestly, before music was a thing, in my world, I wanted to be a surgeon. And then after looking into how many years of school that would take beyond college, I was like, nah, I'm good. I'll be a singer instead.
Yeah. Less blood and yeah. But, wow. Okay.
But yeah, the bones song was like, occipital, parietal, and frontal bones. These make up the cranium, the zygomatic bone that forms your teeth. Maxilla, mandible, help you speak.
It was wow. So that's so catchy, though.
I know,
like,
right?
How could you not learn from that? And I feel like a lot of people learn differently. Like, I like to picture things or have it in front of me where I don't like reading math problems. I'd rather have something in front of me. So like a song like that, I feel like would help so many people.
Yeah.
But yet, maybe because they're in the public school system, they don't have like those kind of tools available to them or those kind of techniques. That's really neat.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it, like, not to knock on public school systems at all.
Yeah.
Like, I have tons of friends that have gone to public school, and I don't have anything against it. Do what is best for you and your family. Totally. I just know that I was thrilled to have the opportunity to be able to learn in my own home, you know, and get to choose what I wanted to learn. It was great.
Yeah. So now, what was your plans then for after high school? Like, what were you thinking? What did you want to do?
Well, originally it was going to be the surgeon thing that I had talked about. That was originally something that I really wanted to do. But like I said, I learned that it was like 12 plus years of school, and I was like, yeah, no. I guess before I graduated high school, I was still very much in the mindset of I wanted to do the acting thing. You know, I had come across the background work in Atlanta. I was with an agency down there, and I wanted to try and get into like more speaking roles. There was even talk of me moving down there at one point, but right before I graduated, my very first boyfriend broke up with me. And that was my first time experiencing something like that. So I didn't know how to deal with the pain. So I had learned guitar from the time I was 12 to like the time I was like 16 off and on. I would play it. It wasn't until that happened that I went and I picked up my guitar and I was like, I have to write about how I'm feeling. This just hurts so much. For those first 6 months, I wrote probably about 60 to 100 songs.
Really? That many?
Yeah. Not all of them were good. After a while, it got to the point where it was just like droning on me like, you left me and it hurts and I'm crying. You know what I mean?
Right.
But
it was your outlet, right?
It was my outlet. Yeah. It was my therapy. It has been ever since. And I'm so thrilled that he left me.
Yeah, I was gonna say
because otherwise I would not be here right now.
Yeah. So. Wow. All because of a breakup. That's very Taylor Swift of you.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so the breakup happened. You know, it sounds like music was kind of always in your life, right? Like your mom said, since birth you were singing and such. So, like that moment, would you say that's what kind of kicked off your musical journey? Was that breakup?
I would say that definitely made me decide to do that as a career in music. There were definitely moments throughout my life. Like, there's actually like a sticker. My mom has this calendar from when I was first born, like 5 days after I was born. There's a little sticker that she put that said was calmed by music. So I think that's kind of saying something. And then when I was 4 years old, my dad built me a stage out back. We have a pool area.
Okay.
And he built me this little stage. I at every single pool party that we had, I was out there with my karaoke machine, singing at the top of my lungs, making the neighbors mad. And I think I did that clear up until I was like 14 or 15. I did a lot of community theater. Like I said, I think I did about 12 years worth of community theater. I would do musicals sometimes. I think that was the moment that I actually, that was the moment that I decided to start writing songs.
Okay.
I don't think it was until slightly after that I started looking into, could I actually do this and how do I do this? That I came across someone who's actually a friend of mine now. Her name is Olivia Farabo. I don't know if you've heard of her. She's from Palmyra. And she was doing this, she was doing the singer-songwriter gig on weekends, like playing at restaurants and things like that. And I was like, you mean I can do this? I could really do this?
You can make a go of it. Yeah. It's possible.
So I think that was probably the moment that I was like, wow, she's doing this. I can do this right here in my hometown. I don't have to go to Nashville right now. I can test it out. I can figure all this out. I was thrilled.
Wow. So from a young age, you were not afraid. You had no stage fright.
No.
From a young age. Yeah.
No.
That's awesome.
As a matter of fact, I think the first time I ever felt, I don't know, maybe not the first time, but one of the big first times that I felt stage fright was just back in May. Me and my band were performing for the first time, and we were opening for a touring artist. And there were 300 to 400 people in the audience.
Ooh, okay.
And I was terrified. I was standing backstage. I was jumping all around, and I was apologizing to my band because I was acting so crazy. And they're like, no,
it's you're butterflies, fine. Right?
Yeah. Do what you got to do. And we had to sound check on the stage. They didn't give us a sound check earlier in the day. We had to sound check with the people in front of us.
Okay.
So we went out there and we did the sound check. And after we did the sound check, everybody was cheering and screaming and singing along. I was like, okay, I'm fine now. Stage fright itself, I don't think I ever really understood it when people would say to me, oh my God, I'm so nervous. I can't go out there. I'd be like, why? Why are you here if you're afraid to go out on that stage? With my community theater friends, I never understood or sympathized with it until one of the bigger times that I had felt stage fright before that moment that I just told you about back in May. Mm-hmm. But I can't remember when it was. It's few and far between. I could probably count the times on my hand that I've been afraid.
Do you remember who you opened for? When you had the stage fright?
Yeah. It was Savannah Dexter and Brabo Gator.
Okay.
Are they
from Pennsylvania?
No, they're, I'm not sure where they're from, but they're a hip-hop country
I'll have to look them up. Yeah.
Duo.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I get what you're saying. People are nervous or butterflies, but yet you probably looked at it as this is the fun part. I get to perform, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thrive in performing. It's just something that I have to do. I've had bouts here or there where I got sick and I couldn't perform, or I just wasn't booking shows. 2020 was so difficult.
In what way?
Because 2020 of COVID and everything, mm-hmm. nobody was booking shows. So I couldn't go out and do shows. And as soon as places started opening back up and I was able to perform again, I was like, I love this. I need this. I have to keep doing this.
Yeah. Yeah. It motivates you, right? You got reinvigorated.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I had a gentleman on. Have you ever heard of Cody Tyler?
I love him. Gypsy?
Oh, his voice is amazing. I got to meet him first time on the podcast, and he said something I think is so true. Is here in PA, there is so much untapped talent. Like you were saying, everyone knows Nashville. You go to Tennessee, you go to Nashville, boom, or Atlanta or wherever, and New York, and you blow up and you're famous and this and that. But I think here in Pennsylvania, there's so much talent that is hidden that's like, it's just a matter of time until somebody starts, like Jess Zimmerman Band, whoever it is, starts popping off Matt Friedman, another gentleman that's into country singing and stuff. And it's like Amber Nadine, you know what I mean? It's only a matter of time until somebody hits it. Now, of course, again, Taylor, you could say somebody already did, Taylor Swift from Reading, PA, but mm-hmm. it's like there's so much talent here.
Yeah.
And I think PA, it's crazy to say, but I'm going to say it could be like the next kind of Nashville when it comes to singers and artists in the area, I think.
Yeah. I absolutely love that you said that, because that gives me a great segue to tell you something that I don't know if you know, actually.
Okay.
My boyfriend and I, we host a songwriters round in York called Home is Where the Art Is. And that's exactly what we're trying to do, is bring Nashville to here, because yeah. we see all of the talent that is here and we want to showcase it and we want people to recognize it and help support it and help it grow.
So that's awesome. I didn't know that at all.
Yeah, we've actually so cool. had Cody Tyler. We've had Jess Zimmerman. We've had quite a few amazing, amazingly talented people.
So talk a little bit more about it. How does it work, and how can, like, because there's a lot of musicians, artists that listen to the podcast, how can they get involved?
So if you go to homeiswheretheartispa.com, there is a submission form and you can submit to us. And, you know, it's usually not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. We reach out to you and just say, hey, we'd love to book you for this songwriters round. We do it Nashville styled. So if you've ever been to Nashville and you know what a songwriters round is like, that's pretty much what it is. We'll have like about three artists on stage at a time, and each one will play an original song, and then they keep playing for like that hour.
Oh, wow.
And then we'll swap those three artists out with three other artists, and we do that for 3 hours straight.
That's phenomenal. Anybody that's listening definitely needs to do it, because I think, like I said, there's so much talent here. Yeah. There really is. So speaking of talent, I've listened to a couple of your songs, and there's three in particular that I really liked. Left Off, Rooftop, and Lilac, and I'll explain why. So Lilac was the first song I listened to, and I've been listening on Spotify, so hopefully those numbers have been going up for you. I told Jess Zimmerman, I go out on the road a lot for my day job in sales, and I'll just put Spotify on and just let it play through songs, and I'm like, hopefully I boosted your Spotify numbers for the month. And she's like, well, you might have got me enough to get like a Starbucks coffee or something. But
yeah.
The song Lilac, when I first heard that, I don't know why, and this might sound corny, but I immediately thought of the song Just Around the River Bend by Disney's Pocahontas. I don't know why. Like, okay. Your voice, I feel like you could nail that song.
I'll have to take a listen and check it out, see if I can.
Left Off and Rooftop reminded me a lot of like early T Swift and just like what she was doing back in the early 2000s.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That means a lot, because she is a huge inspiration for me. And I do definitely take a lot of like pieces of her songs and kind of like try to find a way to implement inspiration from them into my songs. So I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Oh, yes. You're very welcome. So now when you wrote those like three songs, Lilac, Rooftop, and Left Off,
mm-hmm.
do you remember like what some of the motivation was or what the meanings were behind the songs?
Yeah. So Left Off, I wrote about, there was this guy that I was really into. And we had kind of had a little bit of a thinglet, if you want to call it that. And then he ended up dating somebody else. And then like 10 months later, I got invited to like his sister's Halloween party. So I went to his sister's party assuming that I was going to walk in and see him and her together. And when I went there, he was by himself. We kind of like just hung out the whole night, like nothing had ever gone wrong between us. And it was a lot of fun. And we picked up right where we left off. So I came home and I wrote that song. And it's so funny because I called my now boyfriend to tell him and my mom at the same time all about the happy, excited, giddy night that I had.
That's so funny. Yes. Okay. All right. Left Off. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. And then Rooftop, I wrote during a part in my life, kind of like that gap right before Left Off was written. I was sad because I was not in a relationship and I kind of just wanted to write myself a happily ever after. So that's what I did. Rooftop is my happily ever after song.
Gotcha. Okay. And then Lilac, what was the inspiration behind?
Lilac, I had started working with this producer who just was working with me for all of the wrong reasons. He really tried to control and manipulate my entire career, basically. And it got to the point where I was feeling like I wasn't spending time with my family. I wasn't able to breathe without him calling every 5 seconds. So Lilac was kind of like my song talking about how I felt like a smothered flower.
Okay. Yeah, I got that.
And I decided to cut ties with him and in the lyric, throw my walls up, like my emotional walls, and paint them lilac so that I can make it all my own.
Comes back to the color purple.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, awesome. Amber, let's take a quick sip break.
Let's do that.
So like I mentioned, I feel like your vocal range sounds like an early version of you know, Taylor Swift. I think a great example is the song Teardrops on My Guitar, which I do own that song, okay? Don't judge me, people. Yeah, but it sounds like something...
I approve.
Thank you. Yeah. And it sounds like something you would sing or write. So, you know, throughout your musical journey, who are some of the people that have, like, inspired you?
Yeah, so definitely Taylor Swift. She inspired me to become a songwriter. Early on, it was Hilary Duff, actually, that inspired me to want to become like an actress and then a singer. Those are like my two main big inspirations. But then, of course, like I love Kelsea Ballerini, Selena Gomez, a lot of those like top 40 artists, Billie Eilish. I like to listen to pretty much everything.
Everything? Okay. Yeah.
But no, they're my two main favorites. And I love watching and learning more about anybody that is in the music industry, because the more I learn and the more I know, the more I can take that and use it to my advantage. So like I'll research like, how did Billie Eilish get Ocean Eyes to like, you know, become her first number one single, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
stuff like that. And the more that I do that, the more I figure out what my next move should be.
That's brilliant. Like you really deep dive in and it's like, okay, well, this is how they succeeded. I should look into that.
Yeah.
I like
and it's
that.
It's something that I love too. So it doesn't feel like work. I love like studying the backstories of artists that I love listening to. I can tell you another huge inspiration for me locally is Jess Zimmerman. She is absolutely killing it. I love going to her shows and seeing her thrive. I feel like seeing her on stage helps me because this is my first year having a band back me up. So I've actually talked with her and asked her, like, how do you find the confidence to lead a band?
Good question.
Like, because for me, I feel like it's such a big job.
Yeah.
So I kind of just find joy in going to her concerts and watching what she does and seeing how can I take that and turn, like, put the purple filter on it, turn it into Amber's own thing. So it's, I'm very, very blessed to even know her.
Yeah, it's Jess is again killing it, you know. And I feel like every artist I've met is very like humble. And they all seem so willing to help the community, like help each other out and share like, okay, I did this. You should try this. You know what I mean? Like
you have to be.
Yeah. Talk
like,
about it. Yeah.
Like you can't be an artist and be greedy because then nobody's going to want to listen to your music. Nobody's going to want to help you out. Nobody's going to want to buy your CD or listen to your music. You have to care about people in this business. And if you don't, then you're going to flop. But I mean, that's not to say that you should do it even if you don't care about people. You know what I mean? You should care about people because you want to. that's what's really nice, like with Jess and Cody Tyler and so many artists in the area, they do all want to help everybody. They want to help the community grow, and mm-hmm. it's really nice.
And that's a feeling I get, like I said, with everyone, because I look at it too, like with the podcast, you know, as there's more podcasts locally throughout Pennsylvania, throughout central PA, everybody grows together, you know? So I've told like guests on the podcast, like, hey, I'm thinking of starting one. And I'm like, well, let me know. I'll send you the information for all the equipment. Like, let's talk about it, because I'm in the same mindset. Like, if I can help someone out, maybe they can, you know, we can partner, we can work together. They can help me out or send me a guest. And it's all like about rising and raising up the community, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. They say it takes a village to raise a child. It takes a village to do anything.
Oh, 100%.
You have to have people on your back that are willing to show you and teach you and help you learn from their mistakes, because otherwise you're going to keep making the same mistakes that everybody else made before you. So I'm the kind of person, even like with my my grandmother and my mother and my aunt, I've always had what I call therapy sessions with them. I'll sit down and I'll talk with them about stuff that's going on in my life, and they'll tell me what happened when they were in a similar situation.
Okay.
And the mistakes that they made. And I learn from those mistakes, and I'm like, okay, so I can go around that mistake and let's see what mistake I can make on my own.
That's right, right. And then you teach the next generation. Exactly. Yeah, I agree. Like I said, 100%, because you need like people that have your back, right? Like you're saying, your mom, your grandmother, your aunt, close friends, close family that like support you, right? Because without them, you know, it's tough. So to have that support is huge. And you had a quote on the form, which I really liked, and I want to mention it here to talk about, like, you had mentioned Taylor Swift and Hillary Duff and even like Jess Zimmerman Band. You know, you said, when I watch like their stories, their journey, and know they were once just like me, it makes me feel I could achieve anything if I work hard enough for it. And this is the part that I really liked. If they can do it, why can't I? The sky isn't the limit. It's only the beginning. And I'm like, dude, that's deep. I really like that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's true. And, you know, I just saw a video the other day of Taylor Swift from like 2006 or 2007. When she was talking about, somebody asked her on an interview, they were like, what's like the most embarrassing thing that ever happened to you at a gig? And she started talking about how she played in a bar when she was like 14. And I'm like, wait a second, now hold on. You mean to tell me that you once played in bars and restaurants and coffee shops just like me? Jeez, all right, that's fine. That gives me hope.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like,
right.
I didn't even know that. I thought it was just, oh, well, I want to be a singer-songwriter, so I'm going to go down to Nashville. And she went down to Nashville with her family and moved there when she was like 14 and started writing and writing and writing. And then she started touring with Tim McGraw and opening for him when she was 16.
Yeah.
That's how I thought it went. I didn't think that she did these little rinky-dink shows like we do before. Yeah. It's...
All right. Well, you might find this interesting. Taylor Swift actually used to sing some of the national anthems at the Reading Fightin' Phils in Reading. It's the baseball team. It's a farm team for the Phillies. So they actually have like some of her early albums like up on the wall there and everything.
That's cool.
Yeah, they share like pictures on social media. But like literally, yeah, she was just singing the national anthem, singing at bars. And look at her now. She's selling out like Lincoln Financial Field and all these huge arenas. It's wild.
It's mind-blowing, and it's so inspiring, too.
And like you said, if she can do it, the journey's the same. Yeah. It's just putting the work in and honing your craft, right? Oh, hold on. Sorry, we had an ambulance and fire truck just drive by. For the listeners, if you heard that, and I might just edit that out. But I want to go back, because you mentioned, you know, you've gotten to work with some very talented people, professional individuals, but then you also had just mentioned, you know, working with some maybe misogynistic or not so professional people. What is like some life lessons you've learned from that might be able to help others that are going through something similar?
Never let anybody have so much control that you are not being you anymore. 'Cause for me, what happened was, this person took 10 months of my life, and it was like it may as well have been like a romantic relationship with how much time they took up. And I wasn't seeing my boyfriend. I wasn't having dinner with my family. And if I was, I was having to rush through it and get right back to working. I was up till like 3-4 in the morning and then working again, like as soon as I got up at like 11, you know?
Yeah.
It was just all too much. And we barely got anything done.
Wow. You put all that time in, but then there wasn't a lot to show for it.
We got left off out of it. That's it.
That's it?
That's it.
I mean, it's a pretty great song.
It's a good song.
It's a good song, yeah.
But it could have been done better. And I see that now looking back on it.
Okay.
And also for 10 months worth of the agony that I went through. Because this person just had a lot of mental issues going on too. And I did not know that going into it. And I was younger and naive and I got trapped in it because I was trying to like help this person along with getting to work with them. And the work didn't end up getting done. It felt like it was a very uncomfortable situation. It got to the point where I was just like, you know what, I need to cut ties and figure out my own thing. And I was very depressed after I cut ties because I didn't know anybody else that could do production work. So I was like, is this the end for me? Do I just give up? And I quit music for almost a year after this happened. And I started working as a waitress at the Melting Pot and I hated it. I hated it. I hated it. I hated it. I can't say it enough.
Yeah. What was it that you hated about it?
It was not for me. It wasn't my, what I wanted to be doing with my life. And, the people that I was working with were fine. They were nice. You know, it was nothing against them. It was just not where I wanted to be. And when I finally realized that, I decided to start learning how to produce my own music. And, because I was like, if I don't know anybody else that can do this for me, or if there's nobody else that I'm willing to work with right now, just because I've got such the trauma, I didn't want to jump back into another situation like that again.
Yeah.
So I was like, why not just learn this for myself and see where I can go with it? And that was actually the whole EP of Lilac was my first test run for me to be like, is this something I can actually do?
Oh yeah, and you nailed it. I mean, the EP is very good and it's out on iTunes, Spotify. It's across the board, right? People can get it everywhere and anywhere.
Thank you.
That's awesome though too, being I mean, all right, I'll be 33 in October, so we're both still young, you know, for sure, but like to be young as you are and be like, you know what, this isn't for me. I don't want to be a waitress and I don't want to work in, like, you know what you want to do. Now you just got to commit, you know, and the fact that you're like, I'm going to learn how to produce, you know, you're learning all the tools that you need. So then you don't have to rely on a producer as much, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now don't get me wrong. There are still some things that I totally cannot do. And I learned that with the Lilac EP. I was like, this doesn't sound exactly how I wanted to, but you know what? It's good for now. Yeah. I'm learning. It's fine. It's a trial project. But for me, it's more of just I feel confident now that with people that I work with now, because I have started working with other people again, I know what I want and how to properly convey that to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then if anything like this situation that happened to me starts happening again, I got the guts to say no now.
Right. Yes, exactly. And you know the red flags. They'll be like, nope, I'm out. I'm out. So Amber, would you say like performing and songwriting is therapeutic for you?
Yes. Oh my God. There has been nothing else in this world that has helped me, not even therapy, like music and songwriting has. And it's funny because I've tried going to some therapists and I've just been like, okay, this ain't working. I need to go home, sit down with my guitar, write a song. And I find, too, that if I don't write frequently, I kind of get crazy. Like, I feel like I've got all these emotions inside of me and I don't know how to let them out unless I sit down and I write about it.
it lets you tap into your emotions. It lets you put like ink to paper and get your feelings out in a way that's productive and who knows, could be the next biggest hit.
Maybe. I hope. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's what you hope with like every release that you go to put out. But at the same time, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen. But there's nothing wrong with hoping.
All it takes is one, right?
Exactly.
One big hit and boom, you're on the map. So throughout your life, has there been like one person that you would say is like has been a mentor in your life?
My mom. Yeah. Like, I mean, maybe not musically, but also kind of maybe musically. I don't know. She's just the one person that I know that I can always go to no matter what is happening in my life. And I can talk to her and everything just instantly like diffuses. You know, it's like there's like that pressure release valve that she yes. turns on me that helps me just sit back, relax, and look at the situation for what it is and then take time to work through it. And she is one of the sweetest, kindest, most amazing people that I've ever known in my entire life. And she is everything that I strive to be.
Yeah. What's your mom's name?
Her name is Becky.
Becky. Shout out to Becky. That is awesome that you're close like that. Cause I feel like some people aren't as close to their parents. And like,
I'm very blessed. Both of my parents are absolutely astounding. My dad is the sweetest person. He's always bragging about me to anybody that he can, talking about my music, saying, you gotta go listen to Amber Nadine. I'll catch him at a bar talking to somebody. I'll walk up to him if we're out like and I'm performing somewhere, and he'll be like, I'll walk up to him and I'll talk to him and he'll be like, yeah, so what's that new song that you just released? And
that's great. He's like your biggest cheerleader, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That's
He's
so
great.
Cool. Very cool. And, you know, that segues into, you know, if I'm not mistaken, you have an album dropping. Man Made releases October 25th, which October is my favorite month because the leaves are changing. It's my birthday month. But anyway, let's talk about that. Tell me more.
Yeah, so Man Made is my very first Christian country album. It faces a lot of hard truths about life lessons that I've learned and basically asks really deep questions, but also is kind of fun and inspiring at the same time. So there's a song on it called How Do You Forgive that just focuses on the emotions that people go through when somebody wrongs them and says, you know, how do you forgive this person when the pain is so deep inside of you? There's also another song called Armor that talks about, it's from the perspective of someone talking to God saying, I've been forgetting to wear your armor and that's why I've been going through all this hell and I'm going to try and work harder to not do that.
Yeah.
So
that's deep. That's really deep.
Yeah. I like to write deep stuff.
And this is all your writing, right? Like this.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're writing it and performing it.
Yeah. There is one song on it that I co-wrote with a friend of mine in Nashville. It's called Highway to His Heart. It's a song about focusing on like just slowing down enough to remember that God is the center of everything and he writes a map, but he wants you to follow your own path.
Oh, wow.
So
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
How many roughly songs are on there? Do you know?
It's going to be around 14 to 16.
Wow.
It's a long album.
Just, that sounds like a lot.
Yeah.
Which is great.
We're still in the process of putting the finishing touches on it, but it's going to be submitted for distribution here pretty soon. But we're also getting ready for the pre-album release party, which is the day before your birthday, I think you said.
It is, yes.
Which is so exciting.
October 13th. Yeah, let's talk about that.
So on October 13th at 6:30 p.m. at Phantom Power in Millersville, we're going to be hosting a pre-album release party. You'll be able to purchase the album 2 weeks before it's released to the public. So you'll get like the physical copy and everything. And I'm going to be playing through the songs with my band and telling the stories behind the songs. And it's the only place you're going to get to hear any of that. My friend Lucid Ruby, who is absolutely phenomenal. He plays like the cello and sings at the same time. It's really cool.
Okay.
He's going to be opening for me.
And what's his name again?
Lucid Ruby.
Lucid Ruby. I love that name. Yeah. Okay. I just want to make sure I heard it right. Okay. So he plays the cello. He's going to be opening for you?
Yes.
Yeah.
So if you want tickets, they're only $15.
Oh, that's reasonable.
Gosh, yeah. You can get them on Phantom Power's website, or you can just like reach out to me on one of my social media platforms and I will send you the link so that you have it right away. We would love to see you guys there. And we're you know, if Austin shows up, we're totally singing happy birthday to him. So be prepared for that, guys.
Oh, now I got it. Okay. All right. I would love to. Like, seriously. Courtney, I'm going to be talking to you later and we'll figure this out. We'll get a babysitter for the kids. So like, just to back up. So $15, that gets you in the door. Like, so is there food and drink? Like, talk me through it. Like, you know, there's obviously probably a bar, so you can get your own drinks. But you said for $15, everyone gets...
Talk me through that. Yes. It's $15 to get in, and then you can purchase the album, the physical copy of the album 2 weeks prior to it being available to anybody else. So if you want to buy the album, you can. If you just want to listen to the music, you can.
Okay.
We're also going to have some new merch there, things like that.
So you have like a merch store set up that you can get, obviously, apparel and things like that, but you can also get like the actual album right there.
Yeah.
And okay, so like I gotta ask, maybe I'm getting old school, but like, do you even put like, what is it, on a CD? Is it a USB? Is it an actual album, like a vinyl? Like, what is it?
For me, it's gonna be a CD.
Okay.
I am a CD baby. I love CDs. I grew up collecting CDs.
Oh, same here. Oh my gosh, I had like one of the. Do you ever have one of the flip, like you have?
Yes.
With the sleeves. Yeah, yes. Yeah. And you have like 50 of them. Oh yeah, I had that for DVDs too. And I think CDs and DVDs are gonna make a big. They already are making a comeback in my mind because I feel like people aren't going to want to like pay for Disney Plus and you have to watch all the ads. Like, why can't I just put this DVD in and watch it without having to watch the ads?
I hope they come back. I love them. I love DVDs. I love CDs. And I'm such a nerd. Even though I had like the sleeves and that, all that stuff, I had like this OCD thing of like, I needed them to be in their cases. So like, I would take the cases with me. And if I like took a CD out and you know how sometimes you can like put another CD into that CD. I didn't like doing that.
I would do it all the time.
I still will like sit and sort through my CDs someday and be like, okay, hold on. No, you got to go back here. You got to go.
So like, that's great because then when you want to watch that DVD or CD and listen to it, boom, you know right where it is. My problem was I wouldn't do that, so it would be all mixed up, and I'd be like, well, I don't want to listen to this or watch this movie. Oh, crap, now I got to go through all my DVDs, or all my CDs and try to find it.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. But, yeah, I always had one of those sleeves, and it held, like, 50 or something. But anyway, so, again, remind me, where's it at again, and what time do the doors open? Go over those details.
Yeah, so the doors open at 6. Okay. It's at Phantom Power in Millersville. Okay. So...
I have not been there, but this could be a first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be so cool. Wow.
I haven't been there either, actually.
Oh.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
So.
Amber, let's talk about the items you brought with you today. Yeah. Tell me about it. What do we got here on the table?
So this is my very first ever tip jar. When I had my very first show, it was like an unofficial show because my dad got it for me. Like, it was a last minute thing. I wasn't expecting to do it. And it was at the Camp Strauss Firehouse in Fredericksburg, which is no longer there.
Okay.
But I think I was like 18. Yeah, I think I was around 18. They were so kind to me because it was my first time ever playing. They made this for me. Like, they wrote my name on the sides.
Yeah.
And they wrote it on the front, too. You can kind of see it through there.
I do. Yeah, yeah.
And later, I added the front part.
Okay.
But this has been my tip jar from day one. I don't use it anymore, but it does have quite a bit of nostalgia to it.
It's those memories, right?
Yes.
Yeah. That is so cool. Okay. So your very first tip jar you brought with, and then I couldn't help but notice when you came in the front door here at the studio, you brought a huge unicorn.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so tell me about the unicorn.
So you told me to bring, this was kind of a challenge for me. You said bring like 2 to 3 things that explain you or your career.
Yeah.
And I'm like, All right, well, I got the career part down. I love unicorns just as much as I love cats. And if they were real, I'd probably have a whole flock of them.
I believe it, yeah.
And I do have a whole flock of stuffed unicorns. So this was a unicorn that my boyfriend got for me a couple of Christmases ago after we were at Walmart and we were walking around and we saw it. I was like, I really want it. He's like, you're not getting it. It's $40. You're not getting it.
Yeah. And it's huge for the listeners. There'll be photos up on Facebook and Instagram. But it's like, it reminds me of one of those stuffed animals, you know, or plushies or whatever that you win at like Hershey Park or whatever because you got to do the ring toss, mm-hmm. like the really oversized ones. So, okay, so he said you can't get it, but how did you get it then? Because
he ended up buying it for me for Christmas.
For Christmas.
He was like trying to talk me out of it so that he could get it for me for Christmas. Oh,
smart man. Okay. Yeah.
But, yeah. No, like, the way it kind of ties into like my business as well is the business that we work out of for Home Is Where the Art is called Purple Sparkle Unicorn Productions.
That is so cool. Okay. Can you run it through one more time?
Purple Sparkle Unicorn Productions.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love it. No, I really do. That is so cool. Okay. All right. You know, how can our listeners connect with you and follow along in your journey?
Yeah. So you can check out my website, ambernadine.com, or follow me on Facebook or Instagram. My username is ambernadine1. That Nadine is spelled N-A-D-I-N-E. I would love to chat with you. Please, when you find me, reach out to me and let me know how you found me.
Now, before we close out, is there anything else you'd like the listeners to know?
Never be afraid to be yourself. Just enjoy being your crazy, giddy self. Even, well, I call it my crazy, giddy self, but be whoever you want to be and don't let anybody stop you or make you feel like embarrassed to be you because the world needs your uniqueness.
Yeah, it needs character. Yeah. It needs different walks of life. It needs more purples.
It does.
Yes.
It really does. Yes.
Awesome. I'm going to close it out. Amber Nadine, multi-genre singer and songwriter on the American Grown podcast in the Color Tech Creative Solutions Studios. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and leave a review. To see photos of today's guests and more content, just search American Grown Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
If you'd like to be a featured guest on the podcast, please direct message or email Austin at AmericanGrownPod@gmail.com.
This episode was brought to you by these sponsors.
Cleona Coffee Roasters is a small batch coffee roastery and coffee shop. Veteran and first responder owned, community oriented, and roasted fresh to order. Now open inside 911 Rapid Response, Anvil, PA. Go to CleonaCoffeeRoasters.com to order online, see updated hours, and find where you can buy it close to you.
Triggered 22 LLC, a veteran-owned apparel company. By purchasing a t-shirt, hat, or hoodie from Triggered 22, you're not only supporting a small business, but you're bringing awareness to veteran PTSD and suicide. Please help save the lives of those who fought for our freedoms. Visit triggered22.com now and place your order. Let's help those suffering from invisible wounds.